And welcome back. This is Channel 9 Live at TechEd North America. Here in Houston, I'm Simon Perriman, technical evangelist covering the System Center products, and I'm joined today by Charles. Welcome, Charles. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good TechEd so far?
Yeah.
Cool, cool. Yeah. Well, why don't you give us a quick introduction? Tell us who you are, where you came from.
Sure. So, Charles Joy. I work on the Windows Server System Center CAT team. So we're all about customers and accelerating adoption and things like that. I actually, my history with Microsoft is I came from the Opalis acquisition, which was a while ago now, and worked with the Orchestrator product through that, through its paces. And and now I've evolved into working with service management automation and now Azure automation as well.
And you're pretty active in the community, right? I see a lot of integration packs, code samples, that type of thing.
Yeah, right? I mean, when I was with Opalis, I had created a bunch of integration packs, brought those forward to the Orchestrator technology, and I've been blogging all along. So I had my own blog for a while, and then when this new team formed organically, we blogged as a team, and that's the Building Clouds blog that we've been contributing to. And there's the automation track that I've been basically keeping track of. So, we're heavily involved in the community. It's part of that accelerated adoption thing. So,
great. Sounds great. Well, for all of our audience out there, if you have any questions for Charles or myself, please feel free to post them. We will actually be answering the live Q&A throughout this session as well. But now, our key focus here, we're going to be talking about automation. You know, Opalis was kind of, one of our key automation utilities. But why is automation important for data centers, for IT professionals?
Right. I mean, for me, that's a silly question because we shouldn't be asked. Because, but the three key things that, that people realize when they start automating things, there's a huge time savings. Because now you don't have people clicking buttons. You have maybe some self-service thing that's happening, and then things happen on the background. You have a consistent experience. Instead of five different people doing it five different ways, you have them clicking the same button or the self-service provisioning the same thing every time. And then, of course, it frees up your resources. So they feel better about themselves, and all I do is click a button or click a series of buttons all day. Now I can invent new ways to automate and make things better. So I think those are the top three things that people get when they start automating more.
Yeah, and I think you could kind of see downstream other benefits from that, right? With that consistent experience, that's going to reduce time troubleshooting, right?
Yes.
Because you're less likely to make those mistakes during production, during
development. Less errors present themselves. And if they do come up, they're going to be consistent errors as opposed to random errors.
So, great point as well.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, we have a couple different automation products here at Microsoft, right? We have PowerShell, mm-hmm. we have System Center Orchestrator, we have the Windows Azure Pack. Can you just kind of talk a bit about the history of kind of how we got to where we are today?
Sure. So, I mean, I don't have the in-depth history of, PowerShell, but I leverage PowerShell heavily. Mm-hmm. So, but PowerShell's there. It's in the box. It's a wonderful technology, and we keep expanding and innovating with it. Then with Opalis, it can leverage and orchestrate other automation technologies, whether they're, Windows or Microsoft Focus or not. That brought forward into Orchestrator. And, with SMA, it's leveraging PowerShell workflow, which, it's leveraging all the power of PowerShell, but it's in now a framework that sits in Windows Azure Pack as the automation resource provider, and it gives all that power, and then it has a database backend, and then the flexibility of, it's not as visual authoring as Orchestrator or Opalis was, but you can see it, there's a UI, you can test it, there's a database, there's logging and all that stuff. So it's a nice experience that's part of the OS cloud, the cloud stack. So
okay, nice. Yeah. Now you mentioned SMA. Let's roll back a second. So SMA is?
So it's service management automation.
And that's part of the Windows Azure Pack, right?
It's part of the, it snaps into the Windows Azure Pack.
Okay.
But it installs, and people don't know this, it installs from the Orchestrator media. So if you open up the Orchestrator media, and you could click Install Orchestrator, the big install on the front, down in the lower left-hand corner is this service management thing. And, there's three different parts of it. It's the web service, the PowerShell provider, and the service it's the actual runbook service itself.
Okay.
So it's small, a small footprint, but very powerful. And some people don't know it exists. But that's just the back end of it. The front end snaps right in and registers in Windows Azure Pack.
Okay, so what exactly is Windows Azure Pack first? We've seen all these different self-service portals coming from Microsoft, right? you know, app controller, service manager, and I think our current investment, that's really what we're going to be focusing on.
Absolutely,
now,
right? Absolutely, because it's about the Azure consistency model, right? You have all the great stuff in Azure. We're innovating in Azure. This is one of the first times we're bringing it down on premises, so it's a collection of Azure technologies, you know, that runs in your data center on your Windows Server System Center investments. So you have Windows Server, you have System Center, it's sitting on top of that, sitting on top of VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, and it, you know, offers up solutions for PaaS and IaaS, and provides self-service solutions, multi-tenancy, and that overarching Azure consistent story.
So if a customer maybe has an isolated data center, they can't have a connection to the internet, yet they like that Azure kind of look and feel, at Windows Azure Pack can kind of provide that experience.
Yes,
right?
because it has a service admin sort of role where I'm the administrator, similar to, you know, who would be in VMM doing the fabric stuff, but it also has the tenant side. And when you're in Azure, you're a tenant because, you know, we control, Microsoft controls the administrative side of that.
Right,
so as
right.
a tenant, now you have, in Windows Azure Pack, you have access to the resources your service provider or your enterprise provide to you through Windows Azure Pack in the same experience as you would have in Azure.
So can you do more customization in the Windows Azure Pack than you would be able to do with Azure?
Yes, because Azure itself is like a portal sitting on top of a very extensible service management API. Mm-hmm. So it's one view of what someone can do, and that's what we did as our out-of-the-box experience for, you know, the service management API. And so all those things on the left-hand side, those are resource providers that we've provided, but there are vendors that are creating solutions that snap right in and integrate with other portions of System Center and stuff like that. I think if we go to a demo, I can show what it looks like, and that might be a good look and feel sort of experience. So,
okay, sounds good. Well, we'll switch over to the demo in a second.
Cool.
Of people, so you did say it's extensible, right? So if I'm like a third party and I want to go and add extensions, that just fits right in, right?
Absolutely. So, see, if we're showing the demonstration right now, down the left-hand side are resource providers. This is the Windows Azure Pack service management portal for the admin side.
Okay, so you said there's two sides, right?
Yes.
You got the admin, which is the guy who builds the backend, and the tenant, which is the person that consumes the resources.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So this is the admin side. You see the resource providers down the left-hand side, and there are more in Azure, but we're, you know, over time, we're creating a consistent story. So if you see them here or see them there, that's sort of the end goal. But yes, if a vendor, for example, this user cost here, this is from Cloud Cruiser. So there's another one from GridPro. So that, and it doesn't stop at vendors. If you're a customer yourself, you can create your own and extend it out as well.
Great. Now, there's one piece in here that we really want to focus on, right, which is the automation. Can you kind of give us a brief overview of SMA? Like, what is that? How does it look and feel?
Sure. So to get to SMA, before you install it from the install media, and then essentially this is what you see before you've registered with Windows Azure Pack. And actually, it's not. This is currently registered. Obviously, I have it. Once you register with an endpoint, everything starts to light up. So you get a dashboard of stuff that's run, obviously. Brand new, you wouldn't see any of this, but you would get runbooks out of the box. These aren't those, but you can get these from our blog. But there's a set of 30, I think, sample templates, which is nice because when Orchestrator shipped, you'd have to go somewhere else to get the stuff. This is out of the box. You can go, how would I use an asset, or how would I create a credential, or something like that. Those examples are in box. I don't have them in this environment, but you certainly will if you install it. So the other thing that you probably be used to from an orchestrator standpoint is assets. And that's where you store variables or, you know, import your modules. So if you want to interact with Azure or something or VMM, you import a module and then you have the ability to, you know, pull those commandlets in and leverage them.
So by module, you mean like the PowerShell
module? PowerShell modules, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you could just import a PowerShell module. And then since this is PowerShell workflow, if we go take a look at any random runbook that I've created, for example, this is a test one I built. There's Git VMM info. I'm going to put it in draft so it's a little bit more colorful. But PowerShell workflow follows that same structure. Give me a name, and then I'll get some variables from our assets. And then you can do things that aren't, because PowerShell workflow and PowerShell aren't exactly the same thing. PowerShell.
So yeah, what is the difference?
Right, so PowerShell Workflow lets IT pros and devs leverage the benefits of Windows Workflow Foundation and the ease and automation capabilities of PowerShell. So it was built, obviously, after. It's an innovation on PowerShell, and it's best used for multi-device, long-running, sequenced, large-scale sort of anything that requires checkpointing or persistence and stuff. So it bolsters up a PowerShell script into something that you can actually say, I want to intentionally suspend this, have a user go do something, and then have it start up again. So that's kind of thing. Because if in a PowerShell script, you can put a sleep in there. Okay. But this says, I'm going to checkpoint this, suspend it, or I'm going to suspend it, it's checkpointed at that point, and then it's going to know everything that happened, and I can continue on. And what SMA does is bring all that PowerShell workflow power into the Windows Azure Pack portal, and then at your fingertips, as part of the Cloud OS stack. So,
So let me roll back even further. You mentioned Windows Workflow. What exactly is Windows Workflow?
So it was a structure. It's a foundation or framework that allowed for these enhancements to happen on top of the existing PowerShell the commitments that we already had. So.
Okay, very nice. Now you went to the dashboard in the very beginning, and I saw some of those spikes. What exactly are those spikes showing me?
So in Windows Azure Pack, or in SMA specifically, you see up here at the top, queued, failed, stopped, suspended, completed, running. Those are various things that are being tracked. So if I check one, you can see they're starting to disappear, and I can see how many queued over time, or how many failed over time, or how many were running over time. So it's a different dashboard of different statuses that the runbooks actually lived in.
Okay, nice. Now you mentioned that going back to the PowerShell modules, can we load any type of PowerShell module in? I mean, there's several hundred across Microsoft
now. Yeah, and that's the power of this. Your existing investments in PowerShell, any modules that you've built, any modules you will build, can go and be integrated right into here. Now, whether or not you're going to have to do some extra work to tweak and make them work in PowerShell Workflow, that's to be determined, but there's plenty of resources out there to get you started either from PowerShell from scratch, or if you know PowerShell, get working with PowerShell Workflow.
So if I have an existing PowerShell script and I want to run it through SMA, what might I need to do? Well, just a traditional script, just execute?
So let's say you have, if you just have a traditional, like this example, say I wrote this example to get information from SCCM or from VMM, right? This would be my script here. Because there's some aspects of that won't work natively in Workflow, specifically import module, I had to put it in an inline script. So your get out of jail free card necessarily when you start to learn, you can actually just put things in an inline script. It's not a best practice, but you're getting used to the experience. Because if you look at, it's not the same PowerShell experience. See the using in here? If this was outside of an inline script, you wouldn't need that, but you need it because it's in the inline script, because it's sort of it's its own tent doing its own work in there, and you could get in and out of it. It's like a very specialized function, and you could remote with it through PowerShell remoting and stuff like that, so it's very powerful. So that would be the first thing. Now, if you had a window or PowerShell workflow script, like you've already done, you could literally just import it. And as long as it follows the correct structure, and if it works outside of SMA, it should just work inside of SMA.
Okay. So well, we have a question that's already come in from the UK. And we're basically asking about Azure automation. Uh-huh. So if I want to go and connect, so I've written a script, I do some Azure automation. How can we really connect things to Azure here?
So you can import the modules into Windows Azure Pack. But there's a weird paradigm right now, because automation lives on the administrative side.
Okay.
So if you're an administrator and you're not really going to spin things off for tenants, then you can leverage SMA in that, because you're going to have to put your subscription and your connection information in there. But if you're trying to offer automation to Azure endpoints to your tenants, the best place to do that is in Azure Automation itself, and not leveraging WAP on premises, because it takes away that, how do I get my subscription to connect to Azure on-prem? So, but with Azure Automation itself in the cloud, there's a couple example runbooks that are on Script Center right now that you just do connect-azure, put your Azure subscription in there, it gets your, it does everything with the certificate it needs, and then you can do all the automation that you want for Azure Automation right off the bat. So,
cool. Well, let's spend a minute just talking about Azure Automation. It's a feature that Microsoft recently announced, pretty new. Is it in preview or full release right now?
It's preview.
It's still in preview. Okay, yep. So what exactly is Azure Automation? What's the scenario that you can accomplish with it?
So I actually created an example and posted to Script Center, and actually it was a blog post of mine that I will bring up here, because I actually I've called the blog post The Evolution of Cloud Automation.
Nice.
Because the original set of runbooks I built were in Orchestrator that would be on-prem, changing stuff in Azure. And then I built a bunch of PowerShell workflows that I could have used easily in SMA. Then I went to Azure Automation, and what Azure Automation is that same SMA experience, but it's snapped into Azure, as you know, the Azure that's in the public cloud. So that's a consistent experience that we brought from on-prem and went to the cloud. Most of the stuff has come from
the other direction.
So I was happy to see that. Plus, I already took all my investments that I made in SMA, and I could now just put them in the cloud. And it offers, I think, the future of cloud automation, because what better is to have, it's like with Azure Site Recovery. The witness is in the cloud. It's not on your premises. So if something happens on premises, then I don't have to worry about it because my automation's in the cloud. Now that's evolving and a lot of innovation happening there. So getting stuff to orchestrate and automate from the cloud down to on-prem, that's, more works to be done there, but that's the future. And that's how I would leverage it, have all my automation stuff somewhere else and not have to worry about it. What happens if my infrastructure goes down?
Okay. Now, a lot of people that have been using Orchestrator in the past, they're used to the graphics authoring tool. This isn't a graphics-based utility.
Right.
So, like, what's a good best practice to get people started, right? I want to go create my first workflow. How would you encourage people to just start to become more familiar with it?
Right. So, I would say going forward, because you see the investments in PowerShell, if you are using Orchestrator, a lot of people use Orchestrator to say, hey, give me some information from a database, and then populate this PowerShell script and execute. I think those are the best way, that's going to be the fastest way forward to learn. So if you're going to build net new automation, I would personally do it in PowerShell, because you get a lot of benefits from that. One, it's in PowerShell, so you can run it on-prem in Windows.
Okay.
You can run it in Orchestrator, because Orchestrator can run PowerShell, or you can run it in SMA. So start, open up ISE. If you want to do something, start with something simple. Just do a git process. You'll see the output that you get, and then put it in Orchestrator, because you're used to that. See what the output happens there. Then put it in SMA, see what happens there. And take it through its paces from something you're familiar with to something that you're just starting to get comfortable with. I think that's the best way to start moving down this path.
Okay, well, we have another question that came in, just kind of a clarifying question. Can you use SMA purely for your private cloud, no connection up to Windows Azure?
Absolutely, and in fact, that's how I would recommend it to be used, and I would let Azure Automation handle the Azure stuff, now. And until there's a solid connection between the on-prem, some people don't want that, obviously. So absolutely, you can just do on-prem stuff with SMA. You could, any existing endpoints that you have, VMM, or third-party stuff. A lot of storage vendors have it. A lot of monitoring solutions have PowerShell. So import those modules, write some stuff, and start automating on-prem.
Nice, nice. Well, you mentioned VMM, so let's kind of move into some of our integration with System Center.
Sure.
So tell me, how can we connect this with Virtual Machine Manager? How would someone tie these products together?
Sure. So back to the initial demo that I showed you, this right here, it's not doing a lot, is integrating with Virtual Machine Manager. It's actually integrating with Virtual Machine Manager in almost identical way, back-end-wise, as the Orchestrator did, because Orchestrator's integration pack for VMM was PowerShell. Had a UI sitting on top of it. This takes essentially the guts of that and says, I want to get a VMM server. I want to get a VM network in this example. But I'm doing more complex things in this demonstration here. I'm creating an actual VM network, passing or giving it some static values. You could do whatever you want there. But this is creating a virtual network that will live in WAP, and it's on behalf of the tenant. So that's kind of a neat scenario, because I'm an administrator on the automation side, but the actions I'm taking automatically are provisioning resources for my tenant on behalf of that tenant. So this is essentially the demonstration that you see here is a pretty complex VMM integration scenario.
Okay.
And it's available on the blog. So if you want to get started or see how that looks, you can certainly do that.
Now, what about System Center Service Manager? You know, this is a self-service portal. Service Manager also has a self-service portal. Can they interact? What's the recommendation for using these together?
Right. So I haven't delved much into that, but absolutely they can. Grid Pro is all the buzz because they've created a resource provider that would snap in here, and it provides that consistent experience for Azure Pack. And it hooks directly into Service Manager. So I think that shows that it's possible, right? It doesn't say that they're the only vendor I haven't used that product particularly, but I hear everybody talking about it. So it's worth checking out. They have some videos on their website and stuff like that, but that's one of the first things I've seen that integrates WAP with Service Manager. Because if you didn't have something like that, you'd either have to leverage Orchestrator because it has the integration pack and then call Orchestrator between SMA, which is perfectly fine, or you'd have to write PowerShell against your Service Manager, which most people probably don't want to start doing because they've been so used to using the integration pack. So I think that the resource provider from GridPro is probably a good way to just start investigating the commitment in it.
Okay, well, let's talk a little more about Orchestrator integration as well, since you brought that up. You know, a lot of people have been making these investments in Orchestrator over the last couple of years. This is something that we're looking towards, right? We're kind of trending towards this direction. Mm-hmm. Can you call a runbook from SMA? Can Orchestrator call SMA? How do these pieces tie together?
Absolutely. So in the latest release of Orchestrator, a PowerShell provider was now in box. So what it does, it wraps up the web service. So they both have web services. So innately, they can call each other. But both of them also have PowerShell providers. So it's start SMA job, and it's start Orchestrator job, you know, sort of thing. And they can volley information back and forth. In fact, we have a fun with Orchestrator. One of the guys on my team created a sort of a game where it passes data back and forth between
Like the ping pong thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
so, yeah absolutely. And for scenarios where you have things that you have investments in Orchestrator and you want to keep them there, you can keep them there and have SMA orchestrate the Orchestrator.
Great. Well, one of the questions we have come in as well is, will Orchestrator go away now that everybody's really trying to focus on PowerShell?
I certainly can't answer a roadmap question. I'm not. I don't have the disclosure of that. But I can tell you what the direction is. The North Star is the best of both worlds, where there's a commitment in Orchestrator, there's a commitment in SMA and Azure Automation, and you're going to be able to take the best of Orchestrator, which for most people is the visual authoring, right? Mm-hmm. And then power of PowerShell workflow, and then the end state will be that sort of the product.
Kind of best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds, and we're not leaving anybody behind. I mean, our team works very closely with the product team, and I've had this conversation with that team very often because it's the number one question we get.
Right.
I have these investments. Are we going to be left behind? Absolutely not. We're committed to getting your scenarios, at the very least, your scenarios updated to work with the Cloud OS strategy.
Okay, well, we got a question coming about security. So first, can you just kind of give us a quick overview of what type of security options do you have? You know, can anyone run these workflows? Is it scoped down by different users or tenants?
So because Windows Azure Pack was modeled after Azure, and Azure is a tenant experience, it's that first level security is you can be a service administrator in WAP, you could be a tenant in WAP. Right now, tenants don't have any access, unfettered access to automation.
Okay.
You can provide it. You can create your own resource provider and provide them that. You can also build your own portal, and you can do the role-based access control to that portal for your users to kick off runbooks. But if we look at where automation lives in WAP right now, it's on the service administrator side. So anyone who's a service administrator has the ability to leverage those things, to leverage what's in there. Now, Orchestrator was different, right? You could lock down particular runbooks. Mm-hmm. RBAC is very important. It's one of the highest requested things, and it's obviously coming. It's just not there right this second. But there are other ways, through constrained sessions with PowerShell or something like that, you can limit the exposure of what people have access. So you could use PowerShell web access, put that in a constrained session, and then expose service or SMA runbooks, and then they have a limited view of what they can actually do. So there, while it's not baked in yet, there are many ways to control access.
Okay, and we had another question come in, and I don't know if you can answer this one, but it's asking about Windows Azure Multi-Factor Authentication. Are we able to leverage that, right? So can you create a runbook here that logs someone into one location? They can stay logged in as they connect to all different services.
I don't have any specific exposure to that. It, if it can be done in PowerShell, that's the sort of the rule of thumb.
If okay.
It can be done in PowerShell, yes. I haven't had any exposure to that, so I can't answer that directly. If you send an email, I could certainly get that in front of somebody, and we could answer that question for you. But, you know, most things are possible, so who knows, right?
All right, right. And I mean, you know, the way that we kind of looked at Orchestrator, right, you could almost write an integration pack with Orchestrator if anything had an API, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a function, an API, SSH, script, PowerShell, you know, you name it. Does SMA have that same capability?
Yeah, and essentially, they're not exactly equal, but if you could think of an integration pack as a PowerShell module, you can do it. You could build your own PowerShell modules. In fact, Eamon from the SE Automation team recently published a blog post for managing SSH-enabled Linux hosts using service management automation. He built, if we look at it, and I get this question a lot, the people love the SSH object as an orchestrator, right? Because it can connect, just give me a port, give me a server, give me a set of commands, right? So that's, and we basically automate PuTTY under the covers, but we expose those three fields. With this example, what he's provided is a module that still automates PuTTY via Plink, and provides you a set of parameters now that say what's the server, what's the port, and what's the command. So it's not perfect parity, but it is the direction that we're headed. So you could create your own modules, which I think is one of the most powerful things, because you could do whatever you want. And I think it's easier, from personal experience, to create modules than it is to create integration packs. Because you don't have to worry about what is this going to look like in the UI. It's just like, what does it look like as the commands or, you know, all that. So I think it's a little bit easier. It's a different learning curve, but it's still, I think it'll be easier.
Okay, nice. Well, let's go ahead and take maybe a specific example and walk through that. I think tenant provisioning is one that you've talked about before.
Sure.
Could you just kind of walk us through, you know, how do you set it up? How do we get going with tenant provisioning?
Sure. So first I want to say everything that I will show or have showed, if you see my session you know, yesterday or you watch it on demand, everything's available via the Building Clouds blog. So all that I've published. And in fact, the post you want to be looking for, if we look at the automation track, is one that I've called, and there's a, I could give the links and stuff like that. It's the VMroll lifecycle, because tenant provisioning, in my view, is all about automating VM role deployments, because we have this investment in VM roles, much like service templates, and what we can do is automate those things to do whatever we want. We have full control, and I'll worry about the link later. I do want to show I'll kick off the demo, and then we can talk about it.
Sure. I actually also want to cut you off and ask, what is a VM role? How is that different from just a traditional VM I want to go deploy or a template?
Right,
or
so VM role takes templates sort of to the next level. If you remember what service templates did, you can... Within Virtual Machine Manager. What they can do is you deploy a base OS and then run a bunch of scripts after it.
Okay.
This is the same thing, but for WAP. And they're exposed in WAP, supported in WAP, and stuff like that. So if we look, I'll actually add a subscription.
Now, this is a slightly different interface. It's gray, it has fewer features.
Yes, yes.
So what am I looking at here?
This is the tenant side.
Okay.
So, and we did skin it differently, and this is a skin that comes with the SDK for Windows Azure Pack, and that mostly for demo, so people like you can catch me when I go to a different portal.
Okay.
So this is the tenant experience. You can see very few resource providers on the left-hand side, mostly because I haven't signed up for anything. So the sign-up process is, hey, you're new, create something.
All right, let's do it.
Pops us open, account, add subscription. I have three plans available. Basic, collaboration workloads, and collaboration workload demo. The demo here is the actual tenant provisioning. The basic will just give me capacity to a plan. And what a plan is in Azure Pack is a set, it's assigned to a specific cloud in VMM and says, I'm going to carve up this cloud and provide it to my tenants. They can get three VMs, they can get so many CPUs and so on and so forth. So that's how a plan is what you expose to tenants to allow them to leverage your infrastructure capacity.
Okay, now these three plans, is this something that you built as an admin? Is this what just comes out of the box?
So that's a very good point. I jumped in a little bit too early. But plans exist on the service, so I switch context.
Okay.
Plans exist over here. You create them. Let's take a look at basic real quick. It's assigned to Virtual Machine Clouds, which is a service and a plan service that's allowed with a connection directly to VMM. We look at it. It's connected to a VMM server. and a specific cloud, and this is where I identify the specifics of the plan.
So we could see they get up to a maximum amount of memory, right. storage,
now,
RAM,
if I wanted to,
networks,
I could uncheck and say they only this plan only allows for 3 VMs or whatever.
Okay.
So it's completely up to you. You fill this out, hit save. You could say what hardware profiles are available to them, what networks. And with the automation, I generate a network on the fly, so that's kind of nice. What VM templates are available, and then the gallery. So the VM roles are gallery items. So
what's the gallery here?
So the gallery is a set of resources, very much like in Azure. It's the Azure Consistent Experience.
Okay.
This is VM roles, which doesn't exist in Azure, but it's you know we're working on it, right? So the gallery here are those VM roles that are available on-prem for and available for doing that extra workload. So we the examples we have here that are my team has built, Exchange Server, Link, SharePoint. So we have the common first-party workloads. And you can deploy them just like you would in service templates, but it's just really easy. You fill out some forms as a tenant and you go. And the automation makes it even easier because we fill out those forms for you.
Okay, nice, so, nice. Yeah. Okay, so back to our tenant side. So yep. Tenant provisioning.
Right, so I'm actually gonna just jump right, do the demo because it's gonna start provisioning things
Let's
automatically.
Do it.
So I'm gonna type in invitation code, which is a restriction that you can set in your environment so not everybody knows. But obviously once the code people know, everyone knows this is my code, then it's sort of that for that plan. But you can change it and do whatever you want with it. It's just a level of restriction, like you can invite somebody to use that plan. Sort
okay.
of, like send them an email, hey, go choose this plan, here's the invitation code sort of thing. So what this is doing in the background is it's going to kick off a runbook that's then going to create a virtual machine, in Virtual Machine Manager, create a network. And then it's going to lay down some VMs on that network. And then it's going to be sending me emails the entire time sort of thing, notifying me as a tenant, because all that information is exposed. Hey, you have a VM that's available. Go log in to your portal. Go connect to it and all that. So, and as you can see.
Now, the interface has changed. We now have the VMs and the networks, right?
Right, because my plan allows me to add stuff. So right now, as it's because the automation's happening regardless, right? Because I hooked that up in the back end and the blog post explain all that. But normally, if there wasn't any automation, I still can go in and go, I want a VM role, show me the gallery. You see, and we have a consistent experience from the admin side to the tenant side.
There
now
we go.
I can say, I want to do link, give it a name.
I'm very much like a Azure experience,
exactly.
right? I could definitely see that consistency
yep.
as you walk through the
You choose things. The operating system disk, how big do you want it to be? And all of these things, just link back to VMM and you have that consistent experience with your on-prem stuff.
Now, if I didn't have VMM and I wrote a lot of PowerShell scripts, I could also use that as well, right? If I just wanted to provision things purely with PowerShell, no dependency on VMM.
Yeah, you can, but the interaction with the tenant would be difficult because, as you can see, there's no automation tab here. I can't have
okay.
a tenant go, I want to do this. So you could have them send an email to you and then someone goes, clicks a button and stuff like that, or you could build your own portal, or you could use SharePoint as a portal and things like that. So there's a lot of options that can happen here.
And I mean, would you classify tenant provision as a type of automation?
I would, because it's a scenario, right? So I'm automating the provisioning of a specific set of resources in any way that I want. You can see here I have the tenant network already laid down, Active Directory is running. If I hit refresh, I bet SQL will be there. And if I hit refresh again, and it's taking time to spin things
sure.
up, I'll have my other things. I have complete control with automation over this tenant provisioning scenario. If you only need a network and an Active Directory machine, and then they're going to self-service the rest, that's an option. If you don't even need a network, you need to attach to an existing network. I just change that in the automation, or identify the network that you're targeting, you're good to go. So you have complete control over the automation, and this scenario, I think, proves it perfectly because it just, it shows that you can do it, you could interact with VMM for networking, you could interact with WAP for the VM roles. So I'm going to refresh one more time, we should see more. And
there we go.
Yeah.
So it's gradually being built.
Yep.
Now these particular servers, are they located back at headquarters? Are they at Microsoft?
Yeah, actually this environment is Contoso Labs. It's a POC environment that we use internally. And it's, but it is back on-prem. It happens to be on the internet, so I could access it from anywhere. In fact, I cleaned up my environment for my demo yesterday from my phone last night. I was like, because the WAP actually renders pretty nice on these phones. I would very do cool. it, but it's not, you couldn't see it at all. But it's very neat because it's the same web experience. I interacted with this portal. I mean, I had to zoom in and click, uh-huh. but I was able to clean up the environment completely from the web. So that was kind of a neat experience.
Well, so this is really extensible self-service platform.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very nice. So, well, anything else as part of this demo? I guess it's continuing to build for us, right?
And this demo really is specifically a demo. I am literally saying, spin up all these VMs at one time so I can show I'm spinning up VMs. But in reality, the automation, if we take a look at the real one, the non-demo one, and I don't want to scare anybody, but this is PowerShell. And this is a pretty big runbook here. We could see that I have full control. I'm going to provision Active Directory. Then I'm going to get the job ID from VMM. And then I'm going to pass that to a monitor, which is going to say, when is Active Directory done? And when it's done, I know I can lay down Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, which depend on Active Directory. So you can do all dependency and everything you want. And so, like I said, complete control, and even you have all the email and everything you might want to notify people that, hey, it's done, or hey, we had a problem, please contact your administrator or whatever. So,
very nice. Well, that was a great overview. Any last closing comments you want to add around SMA?
Start using it.
Where could people go to learn more?
So they can go, I guess I'll use everybody's favorite.
aka.ms?
Intro to SMA.
Intro to SMA.
So that will take us to a curated set of blog posts that gets you started with SMA. If you want to see the demo, that's sort of a more structured 8-minute demo of what I just did, it's http://aka.ms/WAP demo.
Okay.
And then there's one more, aka.ms/WAP VM role life cycle. Okay. So those three will get you into what I showed you and then get started with SMA. I would definitely start looking at SMA. And anyone who's a PowerShell guy, like has never looked at Orchestrator, start looking at SMA. It's PowerShell workflow, and you can use your immediate investments. Now, yes, we want to bring forward all the Orchestrator folks, but there's a big PowerShell community out there. So take a look at SMA. It's got, you know, more stuff behind it than just, you know, running an ISE or something like that. So it's definitely a great place to start, and it's part of our OS, our cloud OS strategy, and you can see that because it's on-prem and in the cloud.
Right, and you also have some videos on YouTube, right?
Yes, so I have a YouTube channel that's been around for quite some time now. I don't even know how many videos I have anymore, but automated tenant provisioning, that one we just talked about, is right here. Also, if you're into building VM roles, I've hosted all of the VM role creation videos that Stephen Barron created. They're all up on here, too. So
nice.
Take a look at the playlist and stuff. I have old Opalis stuff up here, too, just for legacy reasons, you know. So,
very
yeah,
nice.
Just check that out if you want. And, we try to make the content as easy to consume as possible for the community. Remember, we're all about accelerating adoption for the customers, and you know, I can't think of a better way than blogging and videos and stuff like that.
Right. Well, we also had another question that came in about, will we be creating a Microsoft Virtual Academy course for this? So I don't know if Charles knows this yet, but we are tapping him in. We're going to go build a MVA course, and we're going to be able to focus on SMA, talk about all of this new types of automation very shortly. No timeline for that yet, but stay tuned, keep checking the Microsoft Virtual Academy. Well, with that, I want to thank you for joining me. That was a great demo, great overview, and enjoy the rest of your time here at TechEd.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back shortly.